And welcome, everybody, to Studio 2 in Philadelphia. I'm Avi Wolf-Manera.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Avi, we had a full house last night at the Kennett Library. It was a great night. I always love going out and into the community and discussing the issues that matter to people. And so yesterday we went to the Mushroom, capital of the world in the heart of Chester County, and we spoke about immigration. We talked about how migrant workers helped to harvest mushrooms in Kennett Square, and we talked about some of those challenges that they're dealing with.
Cherry, agree with you completely. It was a great time last night in Kennett Square. I loved meeting our listeners, hearing what they have to say. But before we get into that conversation, I want to make sure we also hear from you today, our listeners on the radio right now. Where do you stand on immigration? What needs to change in federal law? What do you think politicians get wrong on the issue? Email us right now, studio2@whyy.org. We're going to read some of your comments later in the show. Now, we are devoting almost all of the show today to playing back that recording of our event last night. So this was Cherry and I before a live audience in Kennett Square, where we had a truly insightful panel of three guests.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the gorgeous Kennett Library here in Chester County. Can we give the Kennett Library a round of applause?
This hour, we're going to talk about immigration. And when a lot of people hear that word, their mind goes straight to politics. Mm-hmm. You might think, for instance, about former President Donald Trump and his latest speech from the RNC.
The greatest invasion in history is taking place right here in our country. They are coming in from every corner of the earth, not just from South America, but from Africa, Asia, the Middle East. They're coming from everywhere. They're coming at levels that we've never seen before. It is an invasion indeed, and this administration does absolutely nothing to stop them. They're coming from prisons. They're coming from jails. They're coming from mental institutions and insane asylums. The Republican platform promises to launch the largest deportation operation in the history of our country.
Or you might imagine Kamala Harris giving her acceptance speech at the DNC.
As president, I will bring back the bipartisan border security bill that he killed, and I will sign it into law. I know we can live up to our proud heritage as a nation of immigrants and reform our broken immigration system. We can create an earned pathway to citizenship and secure our border.
But today, we are going to take those big speeches and put them to the side. We are going to ground the immigration debate in one community, this community. Southern Chester County, as I'm sure all of you know, is America's mushroom capital. And for decades, the people who've worked in these mushroom picking and packaging facilities have largely been immigrants.
So today we're going to ask, why did they come here? How? And what happens, or what would happen to this community if America's immigration system were to change dramatically? We've got a panel of three guests to help us explore today's topic. To my immediate left, we have Nancy Ayon Ramirez, an immigration attorney based right here in Kennett Square. She came to the U.S. from Mexico at age 6. Her dad worked for decades in the local mushroom industry, and she uses that firsthand experience to help her clients navigate a wide variety of immigration-related legal issues. We also have Zeke Hernandez, a professor at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School and author of the new book, The Truth About Immigration, Why Successful Societies Welcome Newcomers. And lastly, we have Guy Shiraki, the former CEO of the Chester County Chamber of Commerce. He was a Republican nominee for the 6th congressional district race back in 2022, and he's now a senior fellow at Commonwealth Foundation.
Welcome to all of you. Yeah.
Thank you.
So, Nancy, I wanted to start with you, and I was hoping that you could tell our audience about your family's story, your journey here, why you ended up in this corner of Pennsylvania. And when you tell that story, I would love if you could tell people why you're named Nancy.
Yes, of course. So my father, after working, he came to the U.S., like most of other Mexican immigrants, because they knew somebody in the community. They migrated to Chester County to work in the mushroom industry because they knew that there was work here. So he began working in the area, and then after going back and forth for a couple years, got married, had his children, and then decided to bring his entire family to the U.S. And when the amnesty came into place in 86, 87, he was able to gain his status in honor of that. They named me Nancy after Nancy Reagan. And because of the mushroom industry, I am here today because my father has worked so hard to raise us here in the United States, to give us better opportunities. I went off to college. I went to Bloomsburg University. I worked for a couple years, went to law school. I was working full-time during the day and then going to law school at night. I was the first attorney. You know, I'm the first attorney in my family, and it was frightening. It was intimidating. Yeah. It was, I felt like I was out of place. I didn't feel like this was for me. There was many, many nights where I was like, I can't do this. This is not for me. I don't belong here for whatever reason. I just doubted myself. But I'm proud to say that I went through that journey. I passed the bar eventually. And then I kept my vision, and I wanted to work really hard, just like as my father had showed me all his life, which is why I remain in the community and giving back and providing these opportunities for my clients.
And can we give Nancy a round of applause on that story? And that is a success story. And I want to sort of talk about your work. And congratulations, 3 years ago, Nancy opened up her own immigration law practice here. And that's amazing. They're very busy.
Very busy.
But I want you to take us inside the work that your dad did. You grew up, you saw him working hard. We're talking about the mushroom industry, and it is largely, the workforce is largely populated by immigrants, people like your father, other folks who come to this country. What is the work? What was the work like for your dad?
Getting up 3-4 o'clock in the morning, sometimes sooner, sometimes earlier than that, to start his day. And sometimes I remember in mostly the winter months, working until 8, 9 p.m., having little breaks. We were fortunate to live on the farm that my father worked at. So he was able to go home and see us, you know, after school or join us for dinner, but he would have to go back to work. And it was hard work. I saw how maybe, you know, he would come home and maybe just sit on the couch. And even today, he just sits on the couch and is just falling asleep just because he's exhausted, you know, from all these years working. And, you know, Monday through Sunday, no days off. And so I will be forever grateful for everything that he did for us.
Yes.
Let me ask you about the issues that your clients face, Nancy.
Yes.
So I think for a lot of people on the outside, they don't quite understand how there can be a workforce where some people are documented and some people are undocumented. So how do people sort of get work, and do they face legal hurdles getting work, or when do sort of legal hurdles pop up along the journey?
People who are here undocumented, either they crossed the border at some point in their lives, or they came over with a visa and overstayed for whatever reason, they become undocumented. And so obviously they have to work. They have to work somehow. I believe that in the mushroom industry and maybe any other industry, they have to present some documents in order to work. Sometimes they're paid under the table. Sometimes they're not, you know, they're not in the books. And sometimes they do have to get some documents that are falsificated, unfortunately. most of the time, depending on the situation, the fact that they worked in the U.S. and as long as they paid their taxes, because they're able to do that because they have an ITIN, which is the individual tax identification number, so they can file taxes using that, even though they worked with another name or another number. And so there's not always a consequence for doing that as long as they are not using documents that belong to a U.S. citizen.
Yeah, and I want to put some numbered context on this. The USDA reported a few years ago that about half of the people working at crop farms across the United States were undocumented. And so thank you so much, Nancy, for sharing that. And so I want to zoom out a bit, and we want to bring Guy Shiraki into the conversation. Hey, Guy.
Good evening.
And so we want to like sort of put Nancy's and her family's story in context by looking at the industry and the business of mushrooms here in Chester County. And we want to do that by teeing up a clip. Gail Ferranto is a third-generation family farmer who runs Bella Mushrooms in nearby Landenburg. She says people in Washington, D.C., needs to understand that there's a labor shortage in her industry that shows a need for more legal immigration, and she ties it all to the rising prices that we've seen in grocery stores. Take a listen to what Gail has to say.
There's a lot of talk about, you know, food inflation and that kind of thing. So, you know, we are very challenged the last few years, you know, post the pandemic for, you know, keeping our costs, you know, neutral, if you will, which is very hard. I mean, I don't see a lot of prices going down. I don't see our cost of goods going down. Labor's not going down. Labor's going to stay or go up. Common sense would be really very nice. Common sense immigration reform. Come together and sit down and, you know, work through the pain points for us, for our future, for the future of your food.
Again, that is the voice of a mushroom farmer right here from Chester County. So, Guy, I want you to help us put all of this in context by painting the picture of the economic impact for the mushroom business right here in Chester County, Pennsylvania, and just nationally. Where does it sit?
When I was with the chamber, and we would try to be an advocate for all of our businesses, there was a real recognition in this county that when I would talk about Chester County statewide or nationally, people would identify with Vanguard or QVC, and those were the name brands they knew. But then I quickly do my commercial and say, you know, 2/3 of the nation's mushrooms are here, and no one knew that. And even in the agriculture world or in the context of meeting with policymakers, explaining how that this was different than grapes, this was different than tomatoes or apples. This is a 24/7, 365-day-a-year business. Mm-hmm. So even some of the the bipartisan guest worker programs are really inapplicable here, because by the time someone comes here and arrives on a six-month work visa and takes 2, 3, 4 months to learn the trade, well, then they're leaving. So the needs in this industry have been unique and needing attention for some time. It's why I felt that the recent impasse of the last 5 or 10 years over the whole issue of the border and immigration, no community has suffered more than Southern Chester County and the mushroom industry, because neither side was really talking to them. I mean, it wasn't about seal the border, don't seal the border, asylum, not asylum. It was, this is a growing industry that is now being challenged by China and Canada. Then here in our community, this is a business that needs people 24/7, 365. And as the professor will tell you, I mean, with the accelerator and the domino effect of the folks who go shopping here and get their cars repaired, and even in the industry, the refrigeration, the transportation, the storage, the marketing, the sales, what it means for the schools to have these folks here. So it's an integral part of it, not just in the industry, but in the spinoff. And again, this impasse, this sort of the two sides yelling at each other, past each other, no community has suffered more than this one, because this is a place where the businesses are looking for employees and looking for employees to establish, much like Nancy's, to come here to learn, to do well, to grow, to raise families, to go into management, and then become part of it. Something I'm sympathetic to is always point out, my name's Shiraki. You can check the registry on the Mayflower. We were not on it. So it is important that we have a healthy, vital immigration policy, and in no place more important than here because it's vitally important to our growth. This has always been one of the fastest growing economies of any county in the nation, and one of the things that holds us back from either even further growth has been this impasse down in Washington.
This is a very labor-intensive industry. The question I imagine a lot of people will have is why is the workforce, not just now, but historically, so dominated by immigrants, newcomers to the country? And I want to bring in the voice now of Pete Gray, who is a grower and manager at Phillips Mushroom Farms. And he told us that it's simply not realistic to think the farms could find labor based on the people who are already living in this area. This is what Pete had to say.
Very rarely will we find somebody that's local that will do this job for more than, the last guy I hired probably lasted a week. And that was about it. You know, I just don't think the new generation wants to work too hard, so.
All right, so Zeke Hernandez.
Mm-hmm.
I think when some people hear that, what they're going to hear is that the mushroom growers exploit the immigrant labor, pay them very little, it's hard work, and by doing that, they drag wages down. I know you're going to tell me that's wrong, but why is it wrong?
It's wrong because we have plenty of evidence across lots of industries, so not just in agriculture, but think construction, household services, manufacturing, and we even saw it during the pandemic, right? During the pandemic years here in the United States, for policy and other reasons, we were short over 1 million immigrants over those 2 years, right? You saw wages go up and job shortages not filled. There just simply are not enough people. And there's two reasons for that. One is our demographic numbers are such that we are just not birthing enough people in this country. We just aren't. Right, so one claim that you are going to hear often during political season is, oh, all new jobs are going to immigrants. That's like saying, you know, all preschool spots were filled by children under 7. Well, of course, because there are no new workers going into the economy through natural birth. So the only way we get them is by importing them, right, by bringing in immigrants. And so the demographics just don't add up. And so we have to go get them. And so we you know, it was Italians 100 years ago. It's Hispanics and Latin Americans now. I'm guessing Asians and Africans will take some of those jobs in the next several decades. And the key point is that this is win-win, right? It's not win-lose. It's not that native workers are losing the expense of foreign-born workers. And it's not that the children of immigrants are losing at the
expense
of their parents.
But explain that, though, because I think a lot of people will say, well, if you raise the wages of mushroom harvesting and you maybe shorten the hours, you could attract native-born people into the field, and then those people would quote-unquote win.
Up to a certain point, but you also have to be realistic. There is a natural limit to how high wages can go within any industry. And so I assure you that every business person I talk to is willing to pay up to the maximum they can to find good workers. So that's really not the issue.
And so, Zeke, my question for you is this. I mean, we have this situation where there's a clear need on both sides. You have people coming here. They need opportunity, like Nancy's dad, and the opportunity works out. You also have farmers who need workers. But the system doesn't always provide a pathway for those workers to get legal status in a timely manner.
Yeah.
I want you to try to explain, and Nancy touched on this, some of the issues that sort of force people to go outside of the system and do what they have to do to meet the need on both sides.
Yeah, again, it's a complex issue, but look, in the DNC and RNC speeches that we heard, right? What was the common denominator? The border, the border, the border. We only talk about the border. I think we can all agree that we don't want the chaos at the border, right? I think where there's often a misunderstanding is why we have that chaos, why there is such a large population of undocumented immigrants. In this country, there are about 11.4 permanent undocumented immigrants. 75% of them have lived here over a decade, right? And 20% of them have lived here over 20 years. These are permanent residents. Why does that happen? It's not it's not because there's a bunch of bad people who are trying to break the law. It's because our system creates an incentive for this to happen. And what I'm saying, and I know this is going to sound provocative, is it's our own fault. And here's why. The reason that a mushroom farm here in Kennett Square has to hire someone who came across the border without authorization like your father did is because they have no other choice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Let me throw out the following. Our current system, our current immigration system was established in 1990, or it was last updated in 1990. That system allows us to give only 140,000 work-related green cards per year. 140,000 per year. The state of Pennsylvania by itself could use them all. Out of those 140,000, I'm a professor, I can't help it. Quiz for the audience, okay? What number goes to immigrants that don't have a college degree?
Of the 140,000.
Of the 140,000. Can anyone tell me?
It's like quiz.
I'm hearing a lot of zeros. It's a little more than zero.
Two. Someone said two.
Yeah.
Exactly two.
Yeah, so I primed you for a very low number. 5,000. Kennett Square by itself could use all of them, right? Mm-hmm. So when you only allow 5,000 green cards for people without a college degree. By the way, zero of those go to farm workers because our system does not allow permanent resident cards for farm workers. What's going to happen? Kennett Square mushroom farms have to close down or they're going to hire people who are here without authorization. And honestly, often they don't know, right? Because these people aren't going to disclose that they're here without legal authorization. So everyone does what they have to do. There's still a great benefit for all of us. But my point is that it's the system that creates the problem, right? One more thing, and I'll finish. A study came out just a few weeks ago showing what the biggest predictor is of border crossings, illegal border crossings in the U.S. And you might think, oh, it's violence in the sending country. It's not, right? You might think it's lack of enforcement. It is not. The biggest predictor of undocumented border crossings is unfilled job openings in the United States, by far. In fact, it's the only consistent predictor. So we just have to bring up the supply of visas up to the demand we have in our economy. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
That takes
yeah.
political will.
And that last voice was Zeke Hernandez, professor at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School and author of the new book, The Truth About Immigration. We also heard from Kennett Square immigration attorney Nancy Ayon Ramirez and Guy Shiraki, former CEO of the Chester County Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah, we'll have more coming up from our live conversation last night in Kennett Square. And we're already starting to hear from some of our listeners. Keep those emails coming in. The big question today is, where do you stand on immigration? What needs to change in federal law? What do you think politicians get wrong on this issue? You can email studio2@whyy.org. And Avi, we got a few emails in. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Let's read this one from Alton in Abington. Alton says, immigrants who work legally in the U.S., either as permanent residents or on temporary work visas, contribute to Social Security in the same way as U.S. citizens do. They pay payroll taxes, which go into the Social Security Trust Fund. These contributions help fund Social Security benefits for current retirees. Immigrants are helping to pay for my retirement. Why wouldn't I want more immigrants to help fund my Social Security benefits? That's what Alton has to say.
Yeah, and Josephus wrote, as an immigrant, I waited for 10 years after my dear uncle applied for us to come to the U.S. legally from Haiti. I came here in 1995. I strongly believe that a comprehensive immigration policy needs to be put in place. People should not use the border to come here illegally. It is very dangerous terrain and terrorists could enter the U.S. using that route. Furthermore, asylum seekers need to apply, then enter the U.S. according to our laws. That's from Josephus.
And one more here from Robert, who says the immigration process is a mess.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, legal immigration. I could write a whole book on it just from my personal experience dealing with USCIS over the past 25 years since I arrived in this country.
Wow.
That's what Robert has to say. So keep those emails coming. We're going to play more from our conversation last night in Kennett Square, the mushroom capital of the world.
Yes, and you actually got a box of mushrooms when you went and visit.
And it was delicious. Mm-hmm. They had these things called lion's head or lion's mane mushrooms, furry mushrooms. I'd never seen these things before. Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Eat a furry mushroom.
Eat a furry mushroom.
And email us.
And email us, studio2@whyy.org. And you might just hear your email in our next segment. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. This hour, we're listening to a Studio 2 conversation we hosted last night in Kennett Square, the mushroom capital of the world. The topic was immigration. And as we listen to this conversation, we want today's listeners to chime in. Where do you stand on immigration? What needs to change in federal law? What do you think politicians get wrong on the issue? Email us, studio2@whyy.org.
And most of our show today is a recording of last night's event. Our guests on the panel were Kennett Square immigration attorney Nancy Ayon Ramirez, Guy Shiraki, former CEO of the Chester County Chamber of Commerce, and Zeke Hernandez, professor at Penn's Wharton School. And in this segment, we dive into the politics of immigration. Let's take a listen.
Let's bring in a perspective now from a man we're calling Jose, who lives in this area and did cross the border without documentation, in which he explains why he did not enter the country through legal channels. Can we play that clip?
You know, it's like a big process, like, hey, I need that, I need this, I need those. Yeah, and it's expensive, you know. And sometimes in our cities, we don't have money to expend on that.
So the system didn't work for Jose. It sounds like it's not really working for the mushroom industry. So Guy Shiraki, how did we go from a place where the Republican Party was seemingly part of the solution, such that Nancy has her name Nancy, to a place now where there does seem to be this hyper obsession with the border and people crossing the border and this, I don't know whether to call it a plan or a fantasy of mass deportation. How did we end up here, Guy?
Wow.
Big question.
How long's the show? Two things. One is, I think the effects are now being seen in a bipartisan way. In other words, the mayors of Chicago and New York City and Washington, D.C. are saying, help. And look, you know, Senator Fetterman, who's now the Republican favorite senator to quote, but Senator Fetterman has said, in essence, it's a Pittsburgh worth of people coming in every month. I mean, this is a problem. And it's a Pittsburgh worth of people coming in that we're not always sure who they are. The real issue is not so much President Trump. The real issue is that the center of gravity in the party has moved where someone like Marco Rubio is now saying, before we engage in this multifaceted discussion, step one is tell me the border is going to be secure. And I think that's how we've gotten here, which is getting the two sides to say the number of people who should come in here illegally should be zero. And once we know we're on a path to zero, then we can talk about how many mushroom farmers, how many chemists, how many scientists, how many engineers, how many Catholic priests can come in here to fill missing voids. And I sense right now is that until we answer that question, we're going to be at loggerheads.
Zeke, I think you wanted to respond to that.
What I want to say is and bring in a little bit of research, is that the danger of the first let's bring the number down to zero on the border is that actually that creates even more chaos. And so it leads to a problem that's never going to be solved. We have not just evidence, but we have 60 years of experience showing this, right? That the more, if you don't change the system along with the enforcement, you create a bigger problem.
Let me explain that.
So what's our busiest, what's the busiest intersection here in Kennett Square? I don't know. Now let's say that on whatever the busiest side is, I make that stoplight be red 90% of the time. Are you going to have less speeding, less illegal crossing, or more? You're going to have more. Not because people became less law-abiding, but because the law makes little sense. And so what's happened is, when we have a system that only allows us to give 5,000 green cards to people that don't have college degrees, a system that hasn't been updated in 35 years, a system that doesn't allow enough family reunification, a system where an Indian with a master's degree has to wait 195 years for a green card, right? That is like making the stoplight red for too long.
Yeah. And so I think what you're saying is, if we get quote unquote tougher at the border, there will be more people.
Exactly, because you're enforcing more, you're making the stoplight red for longer.
Even with a really big wall.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so my point, look, and to be clear, I am not saying we don't need enforcement. I'm also not saying we don't need to fix these issues. But trying to say let's get to zero first is like saying, well, let's make that stoplight red 100% of the time, and then all of a sudden we'll reform the system, right? Both have to go together. And if you don't do both, you're enforcing a system that creates a bigger incentive. And so to me, that's the problem with the current demand of let's get to zero. You have to just do both simultaneously.
And so let's pivot a little bit and talk about solutions. But before we do that, I want to bring a clip because we spoke with a woman we're calling Maria. She came with her young child decades ago, joining her husband, who also worked his whole career in the mushroom industry. And we asked her what kind of immigration reform she wants, as well as what she makes of all this political rhetoric.
I will say something in the middle. Obviously it rolls, but not insulting people, not saying that they are delinquents. You know, because I think all we know is work, church, park, and grocery store. I think really that's how the life is of the immigrant.
And Nancy, I want to bring you back into the conversation because we're talking solutions. I mean, you heard Maria. We heard about your father working long days, year after year after year for his family. What do you see as being a solution for this jam? You're in the middle of it, on the front lines, helping people as an attorney every day.
The most heartbreaking cases that I encounter are those individuals who have had multiple entries into the country. They came into the country and maybe just wanted to work for a couple years and then save up and then go back home. And then a parent got sick, they traveled back to their country at one point, and then they had to come back to work because without their income, their parent wouldn't be able to survive. And so the law, as Zeke said, the system is broken. And so this person, even though they're married to a U.S. citizen, they have U.S. citizen children, they don't have any criminal background, the fact that they cross the border twice illegally, their options are slim to none. Their only option would be to go back to their country, stay out 10 years, and then maybe come back. And so a reform that would take those individuals into account to provide some sort of solution for a permanent resident, residency or citizenship.
And so, Guy, I asked you the same question about solutions from a business perspective, because the people that Nancy's talking about need jobs to be able to take care of those families and those parents and everybody back at their home country. And the businesses that you represent, they need workers. So what solution would be helpful to the mushroom industry and other businesses in this region?
Yeah, Zeke and I were talking before the show, and it's a conversation that I've had in other contexts, which is, you know, if the people in this room, or if we went to the local Wawa, and you said, stop everything for a minute while you're all waiting for your shorties to get made, you know, how would you fix this? The folks in the Wawa would be conservative Republicans and progressive Democrats and in between, and they would go off in a corner and they'd come back with an answer. because you told them fix this. And they would come back and say, this is how we would fix this, a little bit from column A, a little bit from column B, column C. The problem is that Washington doesn't see the necessary, the necessity of fixing it, because it talks to, you know, ginning up its base. Mm-hmm. The challenge is that, you know, when we're in a context of the sense that for many people that, you know, you see these horrific gut-wrenching stories where, you know, some poor unfortunate person is murdered, and you say, here is X, and X is the person who did this, and X was arrested three times before. You know, I think from a Republican standpoint, you know, I hate to stereotype like this, but from a Republican standpoint, you feel like if there were a few Democrats that say, okay, this is wrong, someone who was arrested for a violent crime once should not get a second or third bite at the apple, then you would maybe get somebody on the Republican side say, okay, well, now there was a gesture of goodwill. What can we do? The downside is until you have a sense that there's some movement, the workforce issue doesn't get solved. The workforce, you know, when you have cities saying we're a sanctuary city or states saying we're a sanctuary state and we're not going to tell you who gets arrested and who they are, you know, I think the Republican standpoint, they're sort of looking saying, when is anybody talking to us? Like, we get the workforce issue, we get the family issue. I mean, you could hear Nancy's story and say, if that was 2024, gosh, how do we fix this? How do we make it right? I think everybody understands the human side. But I think from the Republican side or from a conservative side, you're saying, but where is the acknowledgement that perhaps a Pittsburgh worth of people ought not be coming in? Where is the sense that people who get arrested two and three times shouldn't be here? Then I think the Marco Rubios of the world would run to the table and say, let's talk about workforce development.
Let me ask, though, at this point, do you think there's any sort of coming back from the rhetoric? Because it is so heated, and because we hear terms like invasion so frequently now, I don't know how you then go back to that constituency and say, okay, we've got a compromise, and we've got a new system, and people are going to come into the country from Latin America, from Asia, from Africa, legally. Like, I just wonder if we are too far gone to make that case. And I know you talk to lots of conservatives all the time.
I talk to a lot of progressives all the time, too. Yeah. But anyway, and I coach softball, and sometimes the girls on my team make the most sense. look, the window to fix this stuff or to take big issues is 2025. Somebody's going to win, mm-hmm. and that person's going to have a brief honeymoon period where these big issues, energy, immigration, inflation, are there. And I think the Republicans, particularly from a small business and an agriculture standpoint, are very sympathetic to the realities of what are here. I mean, I had Congressman G.T. Thompson.
Politicians, you're saying.
Yeah, I know. I had Congressman G.T. Thompson. Congressman Thompson is from State College, basically everything northwest, from State College to the Ohio and New York border. He's the chairman of agriculture. He has spent days and days here. He totally gets it, right? But again, I think he'll sit at the table and work with folks like Zeke and Nancy and say, figure this out. But somebody has got to sit on the other side of the table of him and say, okay, what's the security element of this? So if it's going to happen, and I agree with you, Avi, this is really hard. The window's going to be 2025 when a new Congress and a new president come in, and that new president, he or she, are going to have that moment to look for that holy deal. I think if I will be where you are if we get to 2026 and that deal hasn't happened, because in 2026, it's a new election cycle, and then everything's gone.
And Zeke, I want to bring you into the conversation and ask you, what will it take?
Let me describe it in terms of the vibe, perhaps, or the what the political moment will feel like. And I think it will be when we move away from fear and compassion as the two options, okay? And here's what I mean. There are really two dominant narratives about immigration in this country and in every community, and it's what I call the villain narrative or the victim narrative. And the villain story is immigrants are here to take your job, rape your daughter, change your culture, right? And there's evidence to suggest that's not the case, but fear works to mobilize a minority of voters, but you don't get to a majority with fear, right? With the villain narrative. Interestingly, though, the pro-immigrant vibe is a compassion vibe. It's the idea that immigrants are victims. They're the poor huddled masses, right? The Statue of Liberty, who need our compassion. It's going to cost us, but we got to do the right thing because it's a humanitarian or moral right thing to do. But morality also mobilizes a very small minority, but it doesn't get you to a majority. So the vibe has to be a vibe of essentially self-interest. And what I mean is that this is good for us, right? Immigrants don't need your pity nor your fear. Immigrants are essential for us, for a community like Kennett Square, for a country like the United States to generate jobs, investment, innovation, taxes, demographic balance, talent. That's good for us. We can all agree that we want that. And I think when we express it in terms of self-interest, we get there, right? And the problem is that we've been kind of in the fear or compassion and not self-interest moment. And I think actually that is wildly popular. All right, I think everybody can agree that we want that. But again, we have to move away from appealing to a minority of the voter population. Now, that's what the ideals look like. Then we can get into the practicalities. But that's where we need to get, ideally.
Thank you. Shift the vibes. Shift the vibes.
There you heard from Penn Professor Zeke Hernandez, who joined us last night in Kennett Square for an on-location episode of Studio 2. We were also joined by Guy Shiraki, former CEO of the Chester County Chamber of Commerce, and immigration attorney Nancy Ayon Ramirez.
We'll have more after the break, including some audience questions, and you can participate right now. Our big questions this hour: where do you stand on immigration? What needs to change in federal law? What do you think politicians get wrong on the issue? Email us, studio2@whyy.org.
Yeah, and I'm going to read this email from Marthy from Philly, who says, as a federal public defender, I often represented people who worked morning to night under hard conditions in the mushroom industry in Kennett Square. I repped them on cases where they were criminally charged with being in the U.S. illegally. They often spent time anywhere from weeks to years in federal prison before being deported, but none of the Kennett Square owners, business people were arrested. My clients sometimes mentioned where they'd been working as part of the pre-sentence interview, so prosecuting authorities knew exactly who had employed them.
Wow. And she says, to be clear, I'm not advocating that employers should be arrested. There just needs to be change in immigration law. Mm-hmm. Here's another email from Margaret, who echoes a lot of what we just heard Zeke say, mm-hmm. and in fact anticipated what Zeke was going to say. Margaret says, unfortunately, to make changes, people have to be inconvenienced. Consumers do not realize the contribution of immigrants to our comfort and well-being. So that's what Margaret has to say. Also heard from Marthy, and we heard from a lot of you in the first segment. We want to hear from more of you in our final segment coming up. We're going to hear some audience Q&A from our event last night in Kennett Square. Keep those emails coming to studio2@whyy.org, and we will be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Comcast Business. Committed to providing connectivity for your business with network and cybersecurity solutions. Restrictions apply. Learn more at ComcastBusiness.com. Comcast Business, powering possibilities.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. You've been listening to Studio 2 live and on location in Kennett Square. Last night, we were at the Kennett Library talking about immigration, the challenges, the benefits, and what politicians get wrong.
Let me reintroduce the guests we had on that panel last night. Nancy Ayon Ramirez is an immigration attorney who came to the U.S. from Mexico at age 6. Zeke Hernandez is a professor at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School and author of the new book, The Truth About Immigration, Why Successful Societies Welcome Newcomers. And Guy Shiraki is the former CEO of the Chester County Chamber of Commerce.
If you want to join the conversation today, email your thoughts to studio2@whyy.org. Right now, though, we're going to get back to our recording of our event last night, where we had a packed house and took questions from some of the people who attended.
Hi, my name is Sandra. I don't know how familiar you might be with the bipartisan bill that didn't get passed.
Yes.
Because of some influenced by Donald Trump, but would that have gone anywhere near solving any of these problems?
Zeke, do you want to take it?
The short of it is, I think, look, it was better than nothing, right? I supported the bill passing, but I had a concern that it's pretty much an enforcement only bill, right? So it's the you know, let's make the traffic light be red for longer kind of bill. And enforce it more. And so again, without changing the system, which it had almost, and very tiny reforms, it wasn't going to work. So my fear was that if it passed, very likely it wasn't going to solve the border issue, and then it would just lead to more escalation. That's my opinion of it.
But you still supported it because it was something? Is that what that was the idea?
I think the bipartisan compromise was a good message in terms of giving something. I think that...
just showing that bipartisanship is possible on this issue. Yeah.
I also think it had some good provisions in terms of creating federal capacity to deal with families coming in and requesting asylum, because the big problem is that we went from a system where the typical illegal border crosser was a Mexican, young Mexican male coming from work, to a Central American family requesting asylum, and we don't have capacity to deal with that. So I liked some of the extra federal capacity, but there was a lot I didn't like, particularly the idea that we can enforce our way out of it.
Good evening. I would like to stay anonymous because I really don't know how to ask this question, but in terms of the unaccompanied youth that is working within the mushroom farms and do not attend school, and I'll phrase it this way, don't do things right for their future. Again, I don't know how to ask, but is there any comment or anything that's being done for those students?
Nancy?
Yeah. So our community definitely faced a struggle, especially during the pandemic, where there were families, right, that said, okay, well, schools are closed, so you're coming to work with me. Because of the need, and also because obviously they were not going to leave them home most of the times by themselves. So unfortunately, they were sent to work. And where would they work? In the mushroom companies where their parents work. It was very unfortunate and sad, and I think that the families realized, okay, well, you're another pair of hands working and helping the family. It's going to benefit our family, so don't go back to school and just stay working. It happens, and I feel like who's at fault? I mean, one, maybe the parents for not, you know, making sure that their children are attending school. I know that there were a lot of efforts to make sure that that was not happening, but it's very difficult. And then maybe the other part of it is, I think that maybe who are just, you know, turning their heads and not and pretending they're not seeing a child working in their companies, you know, whether it's the employers or supervisors or whomever. And I think I think we're all at fault. It's a whole community issue.
All right.
Well, with that, we're going to end tonight's program.
That was hard.
I want to end it on a positive note, though, so maybe I should take this back.
Can we talk about how nice the library is one more time? It is a lovely library.
Maybe we should take it back and end it on a high note, because and give each of you like 30 seconds. Do you think this is going to be the time? Do you feel optimistic about whether or not we can solve this problem?
You think that's going to be the high note we end on?
I was trying to leave it on a hopeful note, Avi. I was hopeful.
Answer hopefully.
Okay. I have my hopes on the younger generations who are coming into, you know, politics, and also individuals like myself, and I think the panel, yes. To be able to educate our communities, setting an example of how much benefit an immigrant has on our communities.
Zeke.
Okay. Yeah. So honestly, I'm not just pandering to the crowd or the audience, but conversations like these, right? I think it's we have conversations like these and you realize that actually we have a lot more in common. Let me say something depressing, but quickly move to the happy. I don't know that next year or the one after is the moment. I still think there's going to be polarization in the short run. But I said earlier, we're going to get there when self-interest takes over fear and compassion. America has been an immigration chooser for a long time. We're going to become an immigration beggar out of necessity because our demographics aren't keeping up because of competition. And when we become an immigration beggar, self-interest will kick in and we'll solve the problem.
All right, Guy.
All right.
Close us out.
Positive
note. It all rests on my shoulders. I've got to be happy. So, look, the good part is, and the hopeful part is, when these issues move to the limelight, out of the context of winners and losers and elections, then all of these stories come forward. And it becomes not about Republican or Democrat, winner or loser. It begins about this is a problem, and Chester County, Kennett Square can be one of the stories the nation can learn from, well, why the problem needs to be solved, but also how it can be solved.
Well, Cherry,
yes.
There is the hopeful note you were looking for, something to build on
from
a really lovely event
yes.
last night in Kennett Square. So thanks to everyone who joined us. Let's get a couple more emails in. Here's Bernie who says cheap undocumented labor is a commodity with a high demand in the U.S. because many business owners knowingly and willfully violate federal law to make lots of money. Canada has relatively little illegal immigration because its government enforces labor laws. Mm. And Bernie says at this point, the U.S. system is so baked in, I can't think of a solution that won't cause serious economic recession and high inflation.
Yeah, and we got this email from Mike who says, Miss Ramirez understated the work her father did. He said that work is dirty, smelly, and sometimes, especially in older growing rooms, dangerous, often working in dark, wet conditions. Like Nancy herself, the immigrants work hard and are increasingly seen in and around the community with their own small businesses and landscaping, roofing, and other trades.
And let's hear this one from Edie.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating email. Edie says, Congress, both sides of the aisle, treat the immigration issue like kryptonite. These federal lawmakers need to walk in the shoes of an immigrant applying to legally enter the United States. The U.S. immigration system is buried in red tape. As the daughter of a Guatemalan immigrant, I benefited in so many ways. Having a parent from another country widened my view of the world. It also educated me and my brother about prejudice from a very early age.
Yeah, that was one of the big takeaways, I think,
yeah.
was the length of time it takes to come into the country legally. Sometimes decades for yeah. some people, depends.
And so many hurdles to jump over. And I want to note before we close the show, mm-hmm. Cherry, that you know this was a conversation we had last night in Kennett Square about a topic that matters a lot in that community. But we're going to keep doing these conversations
yeah, every
month to month.
Every month.
In communities all over our region. So if you have an idea for us, you know, email us. studio2@whyy.org. We want to do more and more of these live events. It's a great way
yes.
to connect with the audience and talk about things that really matter.
And the people were so happy to see us in Chester County, and we were so happy to see all of you. So we want to say thank you to Kennett Library. Thank you so much for having us. Also, thank you again to our panelists, Zeke Hernandez, professor at Wharton and author of The Truth About Immigration, to Nancy Iron Ramirez, immigration attorney based in Kennett Square, and Guy Shiraki, former CEO of the Chester County Chamber of Commerce. Also, we want to say thank you to the farmers who opened up their operations to us. Thank you to Gail Ferranto at Bella Mushrooms and Pete Gray at Phillips Mushrooms. And if this episode got you hungry, this weekend in Kennett Square is their annual Mushroom Festival celebration.
Mm.
You going?
Can't make it this year.
But you're nibbling on those furry mushrooms.
Oh, my God. And that's it. Thankfully, for Studio 2 this week, the show is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Marie Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Executive producer Kevin McCrory. Charlie Kyer was our sound engineer. And Kennett, Al Banks. Today in studio, I'm Avi.
And I'm Cherry. Thanks for joining us.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.